Good day and welcome to another episode of InsurTech Business Series. Happy to be here and thankful for the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Damola Oloko.
And of course, my name is Folumi. How are you guys doing? How are you, Damola? How are you today? How have you been?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm great. So before we go into what we're going to talk about today, I wanted to ask you. Like, I'm sure that a lot of people on this podcast listening now, I've been asking what exactly is Folumi? Please, can you elucidate?
Okay,
in a few paragraphs.
Folumi is like a brand name, right? So it's more or less like, you know, when you develop like a nickname and you build a brand around the nickname. So that's what Folumi is. Basically, my name is Fee Follower.
Okay.
For those that are really curious, Fee Follower Olorunmola, but it's just I use Folumi more for most of my, you know, brand and all of this appearances.
Okay.
I was going to ask you, Damola, how do you feel about your presentation coming up?
It's exciting because it's my first public presentation, and so yeah, so it's quite interesting and I'm looking forward to it actually. And I mean, it's looking at the list of speakers that are going to be at the event, it's really really interesting and a honor for me to be a part of it. And you know, I'm going to be talking about the customer experience and the need for us to take it to another level. So, and it's an area, yeah, it's really important, and it's an area that I'm quite interested in because insurers need to really up their game in that aspect, right? Because it's part of the things that would push more penetration and convince people really to buy insurance, you know. So it's going to be interesting, and
so basically, audiences are going to get like the most out of the particular presentation.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Trust me, the program is going to be very interesting, and it's looking at it from the African perspective. So it's going to be quite interesting. There are a lot of people that are there and that I actually look up to, and being in the same panel with them is going to be quite interesting. So yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to be like you now. I was you are when you are big, you are big, you know. Yeah, you have been making presentations.
No. We'll take this off the podcast. Then we can continue from there. Okay, which brings me to the fact that today's, you know, topic is actually quite an interesting one. I mean, you're talking about customer relationship and, you know, customer experience in the insurance space.
Yeah,
I think it's something around what you know, our guest speaker would also be speaking to, right? Which is really, really a good one. I mean, this is like the time now for us to hammer on all of those things. Customer needs are changing, demands are changing, there are disruptions in the insurance industry and all of that. So what do you think about that?
It's quite interesting, like you said, because our guest today, Brian Falchuk, is an insurance professional with years of experience in the American industry, working with insurers, working with InsurTech, and he has a book, and the name of the book is The Future of Insurance, and he really looked at the at it from the aspect of moving from disruption, you know, to evolution. And you know, looking at that, I'm quite curious as to what he would say about evolution, because I mean, I've always had the you know, the buzzword around has been disruption. So if you say evolution, it's quite interesting. So I want to hear from him, and you know, I'm sure that even the listeners as well would enjoy that conversation, because from the conversations that I've heard as regards the book, right, there's a different spin to how he approached, you know, writing the book, you know, for example, talking to insurers, you know, directly, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. having conversations, interviews with them, and then bringing out the book, bringing out lessons from it. So you will be sharing some of those lessons from the book with us, and I know that we'll get a few things from there.
All right, so don't go anywhere, we'll be back.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank Brian. You very much for having me on.
Yes, pleasure to have you. How are you
doing? Really well.
All right. So how has it been, the lockdown and the pandemic has affected life?
It definitely has. You know, there's lots of struggles all of us are facing, health and economic and otherwise. And it's also created some new opportunities, I think, a chance for us to try new technologies, to try different ways of interacting, and to recognize that we're all people. You know, when you start connecting to people in their homes instead of in a corporate setting, you realize they have children and pets and other things. Yeah.
All right. That's great. I mean, definitely there's a lot of change that's happening around the world, right? And I mean, the insurance industry is definitely not left out. I mean, I think the change has really just been accelerated with the pandemic. And I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we're going to speak a little about your book. But before we go into all that, can you tell us a bit about yourself, you know, your journey in insurance? You know, I mean, 20 plus years in the industry, working with insurers, the InsurTech. Tell us, you've done everything. TEDx speaker.
So I as you said, 20 years in the industry, always PNC. I've never worked in life or health, but I have worked in lots of different roles and different functions. So I've gotten to see, you know, really every different piece of a carrier: operations, underwriting, strategy, and most recently, I was a chief claims officer for a carrier in the U.S. So I've gotten a really rich sense of what it takes to do well and where we can make mistakes across the board. And I've gotten to see a pretty global perspective. I will say I've not gotten to work in or with the African market at all. So I'm also kind of curious and excited to talk with you just from that perspective. But after my carrier experience, I spent a year with an InsurTech startup, not a carrier, but an enabler for carriers, providing communication services and solutions for insurers that, frankly, right now is incredibly important to be able to communicate digitally. So it just created a really rich understanding of the industry as a whole.
Right. I mean, to get our discussion off the ground, right? I mean, you mentioned, I mean, working with that InsurTech startup now. So, I mean, conversations started off earlier in the year, you know, when the pandemic just started, you know, about InsurTechs and insurers. You know, should InsurTechs be looking to disrupt or to collaborate, right? Yeah. So what's your own take on all of that?
Oh, the disruption question is a really interesting one, and it ends up being, it's part of my book title, but it's also kind of a buzzword, and a lot of people get very heated about it. I think another way to look at it is, if you want to call it disruption because it changes how we've worked, that's fine. But the reality is, we've had change to the way we've worked forever in every industry, and insurance is one that definitely needs it. So instead, I think it's more about how we can evolve and take the examples from those who are doing new things, you know, rather than seeing it as a threat that we have to fight against. And I think the word disruption can bring with it, you know, a sense that you have to kind of put up your hands and attack. So that's when you said, like, collaborating and partnering. I think actually that is the path. So let's work together to try to find ways to change what the end insured gets to experience, because they're the ones whose lives are affected by the losses. Mm. So we should stand around better.
Oh, okay. So talking about collaboration, and you mentioned disruption also in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, the book does mention that the future of insurance from disruptive to evolution. Would you like us to tell us more about the book, and why do you think we should move from the part of it to the evolution part of insurance?
Yeah. Sure. So the book, it starts with a discussion of the situation that we all find ourselves in the industry, whether you're an insurtech or a legacy or incumbent carrier or someone who serves carriers. And that's a change in customer expectations. And this is really global, and it's been very rapid, because the way that people work with different businesses in their lives has dramatically changed. And insurance, by and large, has lagged. And I don't think people are willing to accept that anymore. Customers may have given us a pass in the past, but not so much anymore, because so much of their life has moved to a more digital, responsive, customized kind of approach. And at the same time, a lot of insurers that have been around for a while have a lot of constraints around their systems, around culture, politics, and things that hold them back. Yeah. And the startup carriers don't have many of those constraints. There's regulation that everyone has to face, but if you're a newer carrier, you don't have a 40-year-old system that even, with the newer core system, you probably still have some mainframe system operating somewhere. Mm. So there's a lot of things holding us back from responding to customers. And I think much of that actually boils down to leadership and culture and the decisions that we make, more so than the actual technology or the regulations or anything like that. So the book then moves into a study of 7 different carriers who were very open with me. I talked to them directly and got the stories from them of something innovative that they've done in this context, okay, despite all those constraints that we all face. And the point being, listen to the stories, read the cases, and find some inspiration where you find yourself in maybe a similar situation. Something that they did, the way that they did it, can then inspire you to find your own path forward.
Right. It's
interesting the angle that you came with the book, right? Speaking to the people themselves, right? Instead of just doing your research and what is already available everywhere, and just doing your own spin on it. Am I getting a sense now around the world, right, with the whole conversations around need for digitization, and have we seen a move for insurers or C-suite executives moving from a more conservative way of doing things, being more open to discuss, to be vulnerable? Yeah. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, I love that you use the word vulnerable.
Just before you answer that, is this also applicable to the global insurance market?
Hi, my name is Joel Masharia. I'm the co-founder of Motisure, where we provide last mile distribution of microinsurance products. Keep listening to the InsurTech Business Series to get the latest on insurance and InsurTech within and outside of Africa.
Yeah, great points. And I think they're intertwined. So the case studies are all set in the US. Which, it's a common bias in this industry that's where we tend to look there, or maybe continental Europe. But what I didn't want to do is, to that point exactly, is to make it a US-only story, or even to make it a specific technology story. So there's none of the takeaways have anything to do with technology or particular regulations or something about the way consumers in that market choose to to buy things. So it really is not, while the context is the US, the lessons are universal. And to be fair, they're not even specific to insurance. So there's 3 major takeaways, and they have nothing to do with tech or insurance. The first is about your customers. So actually connecting, and this is where the vulnerability comes in. I think the right word is humility, really, is to admit that you don't know everything. And you need to ask your customers and you need to listen to what they say. And I don't think that differs by continent. I think people's willingness to do that may differ, or it may differ by company or by sector or something like that. But the reality is still a reality. If you're not listening to what your customers are actually asking for, you're not going to succeed ultimately anymore. The second one is about your people. So again, with humility, like the CEO does not have all the answers. And I have seen a move in some carriers, it's still early days, but a move to be more empowering to the people, letting the people run with these things. And this is something I think does differ more by geography. It definitely differs by company, but I think you have some cultural, like I lived in Asia for a while. I definitely will have seen differences in the way the leadership and employee relationships can work there versus the US versus my time experience in Europe. So I think culture can make the ability to apply this or the likelihood to apply these rules different. But I still think the lesson is universal. Your people, your employees are the ones who are dealing with customers every day, who are working with the processes that are standing in the way, who are missing the tools that could help them be there for customers at, you know, their time of need, which is what insurance is about. So I don't think it matters what country you're in, what language you speak, whether your employees should be actually driving the charge of change.
Claims is a big issue right now, especially looking at the pandemic and the lockdown and how businesses have been affected and the likes. Now, I mean, you see that, and this is something that is not just in America; it's around the world. You know, even here in Africa, in different countries here in Africa, where there are reports around insurers, you know, refusing to pay business interruption claims and likes, and same from the fact that hey, this thing is not stated, is not pandemic, is not covered, right? I mean, at the end of the day, this is a situation where none of us ever planned for it to happen. Nobody saw it. Should insurers be looking at this in a different way and say, hey, why not we be there for these people, and you know, we can retain their loyalty? I mean, that's how I see it. But what do you think?
I think it's a really tricky position, because ultimately the reason why you exist as a carrier is that promise to stand by your customer when something goes wrong. And then a contract and law comes into it, and that complicates it, and that can make it, you know, in some cases, it's not impossible to cover it, but in covering it, you create coverage for everybody. And then you have to wonder about whether you could survive that financially. And the reality is, with the amount of economic activity stopped globally, I don't think most carriers would survive that. So I have a few thoughts on this. One is, unfortunately, in most cases, there is enough clarity in the coverage that it genuinely isn't covered. I worked, my claims team and the carrier I worked for, our general position was to try to cover everything. We would always look for how we could cover it. And if we genuinely couldn't, and we really did exhaust all of our options, like even kind of coaching the insured in how they talked about the loss, you know, we'd be like, are you sure it wasn't this? Because this is what's covered. And, you know, I give them respect. A lot of them are like, no, that's not what it was. It was this. And I know it's not, I appreciate the ethics, but we tried very hard to find coverage. When we really couldn't, it doesn't mean you turn your back on the insured. And I think that's what's important, is what other things can you do to stand by people? What ways can you provide support if your policy can't? And that may include working with regulators and working with the government. Right. So, you know, certainly in the US and in Europe, there's a very strong lobby for insurance. And that lobby should be working with regulators and the government to find paths to create more coverage, because the worst thing for everybody is for these businesses to go under, and it's already been happening. But what we don't want to have happen as a society is for all of our, and it's primarily small businesses that are most at risk, you know, these small businesses to go out, because that's the lifeblood of communities. And once they start going out, then you have people who don't have money to buy things, which means the mid-sized businesses start going out, and it's a chain reaction. So
yeah,
if you genuinely can't cover it, you can't cover it. If it's gray, I think you need to stand by the intention. And that's, we had a saying, if it's gray, we pay. And I think that's the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. Now is not the time to be looking for ways to get out of your obligation as a carrier.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If it's gray, we pay.
So I could, you know, from what you mentioned, I took out like two questions. So you,
yeah.
The first one has to do with your customer, right? You mentioned that you have to, regardless of the fact that you're unable to cover whatever losses that you know, the insured must have incurred, you should regardless stand by them. So what would you say about that in an environment that the insured does not trust the insurance company? That's one. And two, in terms of coverage, working with the government and regulators. Okay, so we've always had an issue here about regulators using the compliance approach rather than collaborative approach. So how exactly would you say we should work with, you know, the regulators and government in terms of providing more coverage for the customers? Like how do we bridge that gap between compliance and collaborations with these bodies?
So I mean, this is definitely one where countries and the political norms will differ. So it's, you know, I can speak in general terms, but there's still going to be realities in each market and each country that these things may or may not be applicable, or they may take more time. But one of the most effective things that I think we can do is working with the government collaboratively to understand what is the impact of these losses. So whether insurers can cover it or not, they at least have done modeling on the size of the business interruption cost. So that should be the basis for a discussion with financial advisors, economic advisors, and any government to try to understand what is the economic impact of what's going on. And then governments are incredibly interested in that. And they probably have their own models, but I'm sure they would be interested in seeing more data around this and trying to size it up. So I think that's the entry point. And then the discussion is, what can we do in the same way that some governments have done with terrorism coverage? What sort of, or flood coverage, what sort of backstop can we create where there's a public-private partnership? And frankly, at the scale of this, it's probably going to take public funds to create some measure that's not really economic stimulus package, but it's sort of a way for the government with maybe the administration of the carriers to be able to respond to these claims. Mm-hmm. And it may not be able to respond dollar for dollar, but it could provide something, and that something may be enough to keep the businesses afloat. So that's sort of a pool, a fund that, so if the government can put together that fund and carriers can use it to administer the claims, then, you know, they have the mechanism for responding to these claims, but they're either not covered or, you know, it's contentious for some, but that creates more of a path for paying for the claims, at least, you know, some percentage of what comes through. And then what you could also do is look to a long-term premium tax to try to generate the income to pay for that fund. So putting the money up front is difficult. And so that, I think that does rely on public funds, but for the public funds to be repaid, there are mechanisms to look into that. And not all of these things are viable in every market. So, you know, some people may be listening to me saying, well, this is crazy. Sure. Mm-hmm. But it's an idea. And the point is to start those discussions is we're not trying to not stand by people. Mm. Politicians are not trying to look like they don't care about their constituents. They want to be reelected.
Yeah.
So coming together actually becomes really, like, that's the most important thing to any politician is staying in power. Anyone really, and any executive as well, you know, CEO doesn't want to be pushed out. So I think recognizing that and trying to say, look, we have a shared problem and we don't have a good answer because the contracts are the contracts, the regulations are regulation, and the mechanisms aren't there. None of us saw this coming. So what can we do together other than bad mouthing each other or forcing each other's hand?
All right. So going back to, I mean, I remember you mentioned those three takeaways, right? And going back to the customer, I mean, the customer is central to insurance. A lot of push for digitization and the likes is because the customers wants and demands are changing. You know, how they want to be served is different now. Like you mentioned, that I mean, they might have in the past, you know, allowing some things, but today they are more demanding and asking for a lot more things. So from your experience, or maybe you can share some use cases from your book, so what kind of trends do you think you are seeing, or you think that we'll see in the future in terms of that customer experience, you know, from end to end, not just in the onboarding aspect where other parts are still the same, you know?
Hello, this is Pat Callahan, the insurance elephant, calling from near Buffalo, New York, about 5,300 miles from Lagos. I enjoy listening to the InsurTech Business Series, Without It Amolo Loco, because it proves that even though we are thousands of miles different, the insurance business is not that much different. The concepts and topics that are covered on the InsurTech Business Series, they could be handled the same way right here in Western New York State. So listen in. It's a great podcast, great global and local guests, and it just proves it's a small world for insurance.
Yeah. So I think that, and this is actually one where I think the U.S. is behind. I think there are a few key themes that come out for where things are going. And there's a lot of talk about AI and drones and things like that, and that's all fine. And blockchain, that's out there. But your point on the customer experience, I think that's the real battleground. And the reason why I think the U.S. is behind is mobile first has been the story in so many other parts of the world. Asia, Africa, Europe, texting was much more widely adopted.
Yeah.
Africa and Southeast Asia, especially, people had mobile phones. They didn't have computers.
Yeah.
And that might have been their first phone. So they're used to transacting, whether it's through text or early WAP, you know, the early websites on phones or the modern version of them, like the full internet on a phone. This is how people want to transact. And it's a better experience for the carrier too, if they're willing to adopt it, because it opens up so many more possibilities. Because now if someone's interacting with you on the smartphone, you have the capability of launching all sorts of other tools, self-adjusting tools, self-inspection tools, mobile payment. There's so many things that you just could never do in the way that we used to transact. And even on a computer, a desktop or laptop, it's still more cumbersome. Because you can't, you know, you can't take a laptop or certainly a desktop and start inspecting a loss that inherently needs to be on a mobile where you have the camera and the device can move around freely. So it almost frees you up more. And I think outside of the US, because mobile adoption is further along or it's a more primary means, and that's the US is catching up, but I think that's a strong place to look. So things like in the underwriting process, how are you gathering evidence using cameras, and just the fact that people have so much documentation on their phone anyway, and they're connected to their bank and to other institutions. So using those connections with APIs to bring things together so you get a single seamless transaction. I think that's one. And you can do that in claims as well. The other is the whole ecosystem idea. And again, the US is far behind in this and really always has been thematically. But you look at like Southeast Asia, where Grab is, you know, a really common ride sharing solution and does so much more, food delivery and lots of other things. They have a whole ecosystem with their app that brings in things like coverage for insurance and other services. But it's like you've gotten a ride to an airport. You're probably traveling somewhere. So wouldn't it be appropriate to try to surface travel insurance at that point and to have that transaction completely seamless, so it's a single button press? These sorts of ideas, which back to your point before, Damolo, that about partnering, you can't do that on your own. And that's something that I think in the US they're starting to wake up to that, but maybe the carriers have been historically too strong and powerful to recognize, you know what, we can't do this. We need to work with the leaders in these spaces. And I've seen more of a willingness outside the US to do that sort of thing. Because people don't want to have to do 10 different interactions across 10 different providers.
For the
same thing.
Okay, so in terms of culture, like you already mentioned for partnerships, so I'm just going to give like an instance of what happens here. So I sort of work in a life insurance company, and we have policies like, you know, credit life, mortgage insurance, and all of that. So having to partner with, you know, the banks are usually bigger than the insurance industry in Nigeria as of today. So partnering with the banks, they apparently we are having like a constraint in terms of, you know, policies and, you know, integration with all of this partnership. Integration in the sense that because the banks are bigger than the insurance industry, they are trying to call the shots. How exactly do you manage those kind of collaborations where you have your own different policy for a different regulator for the insurance industry, and then you have a different regulator for the banking industry? And because the banking industry is bigger, they always want to be the
and also on the technology front as well. I mean, the banking industry is ahead in terms of technology, adopting technology compared to the insurance industry. So how do they play?
I mean, it's like running a race as a group. You're only as fast as the slowest person. So that becomes a constraint. So that one of the cases in the book is a workers' compensation insurer called Employers. They used to be a state entity. So they were part of the state of Nevada. They were essentially insolvent, except that the state was funding their insolvency. And just so far behind on technology and lots of other things. And they've really transformed. One of the things that the case is about is their use of APIs in distribution. And, you know, this is another place where the balance of power is skewed. So yes, the carrier has a lot of power, but actually the carrier has no power relative to the distributor. And, you know, the relationship is so distributor focused. So it's whatever the broker wants, you need to do. They want more commission. And they have their systems. And if you can't work with their systems, you can't have their business. It's different than dealing with a bank, certainly. But there is that power difference. And you have to cater to each one of those brokers individually and their own nuances and differences. But you can't actually do that and survive, because it's too fragmented of a way to operate. So what Employers has done is they've taken a really good approach to their API development to connect to these brokers and new forms of distribution or new kinds of partnerships. And it's, they use, you know, agile method, which is not new in technology. You know, it's been in IT for a while now. But they're very structured in how they go about implementing changes to their APIs, new features and developments as they bring on more partners. And that API set has become very stable, but also very dynamic because of how they've been building it out to meet the needs of these partners without disrupting the whole thing. So I think the technology is there today to have easier ways to interface with even harder to work with or more demanding partners. But you need to start building it that way from the beginning and keep plotting that path. If you take each one of those partnerships as a one-off, you might have success with one, but what can you do when you get to the next one but start from scratch? And that's not, that ultimately won't win out. So creating that flexible way of interfacing should allow you at least some of that power back or some of the ability to be responsive. And if you're responsive to them, they will probably be more responsive to you than your competitor.
Like we've mentioned and we've seen around the world, everywhere the push for digitization is almost non-negotiable, right? And one thing that I am beginning to see is that with all of these ideas, you know, you talk about, you know, insurance as a service, right? It's a usage-based insurance, you know, parametric insurance. And I see that some of these things, if we go deeply into them, you see that
they actually would begin to question the very principles and foundations of insurance that we've known, you know. And I mean, just to quote the title of Rob Galbraith's book, you know, it would mark the end of insurance as we know it, you know, right? I mean, I don't want to play the devil's advocate here, but yeah. Is it a good thing? It's long term now.
I think it is. It won't be a good thing to people who don't like change or who, you know, wish we could continue on with what we've always had. But the reality is this notion's not new. We've had change to the way insurance works forever. And every generation of change looks scary. And often it's overthought. So when I was starting in the industry, the war cry was agents and brokers will be gone. You know, within a couple of years, thanks to the internet, you know, this new thing that's come out, the internet, we won't be doing anything with agents and brokers. It's all going to be through these portals and exchanges and things like that. And that's not happened. But there are now these exchanges and portals and aggregators and things like that. So we have the change and we still have the old approach, but the old approach has evolved. So I think there are places where newer ways of covering and handling claims or, you know, completely new kinds of insurance will emerge, and it'll be different from what we've done before, and what we've done before may shrink as a market as a result of that. But it's not happening instantaneously. So this is where we get the chance to evolve. We can make the choices to participate rather than getting angry about it or claiming it'll never happen. And that's, I think that's what Rob's intention is, to bring light to these things so people can start to shift. I think Parametric that you mentioned, that is a brilliant idea. And again, if you go back to why you're in this industry, it's to stand by people at these moments where their life is turned upside down. You should be thankful for this, because it means instantaneously, without any discussion or debate or mistrust. Falumi, you talked about the adversarial interaction before, like we, you know, we don't trust the carrier. That goes away, because if event X occurred, you already knew what you were getting. It happens and you're done. That's a good thing. Carriers don't like litigation. They don't like having to go to mediation or anything. They want the issue to be settled. So I think ultimately this is good. And then the question becomes, how can you participate in it? To me, that the bigger existential crisis maybe is around autonomy and self-driving cars. And actually, you know, a lot of the predictions, I think, are far off about how soon that will be the norm, that people will not drive or even own cars anymore. I think maybe one day, but it's not 5 or 10 years from now. It's still quite a ways out. But then personal auto insurance is no longer a thing. It's product liability insurance, right? It's who wrote the code for the AI. So the insurance isn't gone, but it's shifted. So if you're a personal auto insurer, you should be looking at this and thinking about, as that change happens, which will be a progression over time, where do I stand in that? And do I try to partner with the car makers, or do I spin up a product liability or E&O practice so that I can take on that exposure instead of just going away?
I mean, it just tells of the importance of partnerships, really. I mean, we talked a lot about technologies and you know, innovation and how things are changing, right? We don't know it all, you know. That humility, and saying, okay, we want to go into cybersecurity insurance, right? So let's hear from the experts, let's partner with them here. Okay, where are the risk points? How can we provide? How can we, you know, play better in that space? How can we partner with the car companies, you know, with the Teslas, with the Nissans, with the, you know, and see what goes into creating, you know, making those cars, right? And now understand the customer from that point of view. So I think, I mean, it's an interesting time to be in the insurance industry, I must say. Very interesting, and it was a pleasure speaking with you. I really enjoyed. I don't know about you, Fulim.
Thank you. It was, yes, it was very, 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 very. I really, really appreciate the wealth of knowledge you brought here.
Thank you both.
Fantastic. And I really wish that, you know, you'll find time to come down to Africa as well and, you know, see what our market has to offer.
I'm so curious about it. And I think it's a really interesting market because it has the chance to skip over a lot of, honestly, centuries.
Yes.
Of, yeah. And skip ahead. And going mm-hmm. back to that mobile point, like you guys yeah. have an enabler in your fingertips that mm-hmm. most of the world, maybe barring Southeast Asia, just didn't, mm-hmm. or Asia as a whole, didn't have. So yeah. I'm really curious. I think actually Africa could be a hotbed of innovation on the customer experience side because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we let you go, can you, so how can people get your book? Is it out yet?
It's out. Yeah. Yeah. So it's available globally through Amazon. So if you go to your local Amazon store, you know, you can search for The Future of Insurance and you should find it. It's also available.
I actually saw it like a couple of days ago on
good.
Amazon.
Good. Yeah. and you can learn more about it at future-of-insurance.com. And I link to the international Amazon stores there as well. Okay. But yeah, if you go to Amazon, you can get it there. And it's on Kindle and Audible and paperback as well.
All right, amazing. How can people connect with you? LinkedIn, Twitter?
Yeah, I'm at Brian Falchuk, BryanFalchuk on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook and everything. And you can follow my insurance stuff at InsureEvolve.
All right, oh, great. It was amazing speaking with you. Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Thank you,
Brian.
Thank
you very much.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. So take care.
Thank you.
And do stay safe.
You too.
Hello and welcome to the new segment in today's episode of InsurTech Business Series. My name is Fulumi. These are today's news. Ghana's largest insurance enterprise, Stanbic IBTC, Ayers Holding, apply for insurance license. The four firms will be called Ayers Insurance Limited General, Stanbic IBTC Insurance Limited, Ayers Life Assurance Limited, and Enterprise Life Assurance Company Nigeria Limited. This would increase the insurance activities in Nigeria. Pillar partners with Lagos Ministry of Women Affairs on fight against rape. The Women in Insurance under the umbrella body of Professional Insurance Ladies Association, popularly known as Pillar, has partnered with the Lagos Ministry of Women Affairs and Poverty Alleviation to help fight against rape, which has become increasingly a concern in the society. Pillar believes that as professionals in insurance, they could support government in creating awareness that protects the rights of women, as well as helping the vulnerable amongst them to speak up when abused. Insurance industry assets rise to 1.61 trillion. The combined assets of the Nigerian insurance industry rose to 1.61 trillion at the end of the 2019 financial year. This was a growth from 1.26 trillion in 2018. According to the Nigerian Insurance Association, that's NIA, in its 2019 report, declared that the total business underwriting in the industry rose by 15.55% from 413.8 billion in 2018 to 490 billion in 2019. And we've come to the end of the news segment. Thank you and stay tuned.
So welcome back, guys. I'm sure you enjoyed that particular conversation with Brian. Now you understand when we say evolution. So
yeah.
It doesn't seem like an alien word anymore. He's been able to break down what he meant by, evolution in the industry rather than just, you know, the regular disruption that we've been talking about all along. What do you think, Damola?
Yeah. You have a great point there. And, you know, the lessons from the book, you know, about innovation, about humility, you know, are things that, you know, insurers, even in this part of the world, you know, should begin to look at, you know, when they are rethinking their processes and their strategies, you know, because at the end of the day, you have to rethink the way we do our business, because the customer has to be central to everything that we're going to be doing going forward. The customer-centric, you know, insurance, and also putting the employees as well first, in terms of bringing them into the decision process, you know, helping
like even our customers, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, because those people are the ones that are on the field, those are the ones that are doing the work exactly, directly. Yeah. So, yes, your management, and yes, you make the buck stops at your desk, yes, but those people are the ones that, if you make them part of the decision process, they can be innovative, bring out innovative ideas that can move the company even, you know, to better heights. So a more open insurance industry, you know, to innovation, to new ideas, is what we really need in this part of the world.
Which is true. So do you really think that evolution is the right word to, you know, define the growth we're expecting in insurance industry? You know, disruption is saying that we're going to they are like going to be, you know, really I don't want to say sudden changes that would change, you know, the way we do things generally. So are you going to say that evolution would be like the best way to describe the growth in the insurance industry?
Like I said earlier, I mean, you have a point when you talk about evolution, and I mean, Brian did a good job there. But I still look at it from the era of disruption, because the truth of the matter is that a lot of this technology innovation that we have been talking about and have been seeing around the world, in China, in India, in the US, in Europe, some of these technologies and ideas, they are going to actually question some of the principles of insurance that we have known for a long time.
Used to, exactly.
Yes, right. So I am seeing it more of in terms of disruption, because things will definitely change, right? And it's going to be and I think that the thing is, insurers don't want to hear disruption, because if it sounds like they are going to be taken away from the table, like they're just going to be replaced, right? So I guess you know, evolution is a more subtle and inviting way to put it. But I still think that it's going to be more or less like a disruption, because I think we need a hard reset, right? Because what we are doing right now doesn't work, and we need to change fast. You know, evolution is like gradual, but we need to change fast, because already we are playing catch up to other industries in Nigeria, and then even other insurance industries around the world, even other parts of Africa, you know. So I think it's more of like a disruption that we need, actually.
Okay, well, I think I'll just make out 2 points from what you said and also what Brian has said. So the first one, in terms of disruption in Africa, especially here in Nigeria, I think that's about what we need to, you know, shake up some of the things that we've been doing for a long time, like all of those traditional ways we buy policies, we rate policies in terms of pricing, you know, data collection and all of that. So yes, I think that disruption for Nigeria especially is like the right way to go. However, from what Brian has also said, you know, from moving from that disruption to evolving, I mean, that's evolution. I think that over time, when these disruptions are taking place, then we'll get to a point where we would now start to evolve. So after a lot of a lot of people have, you know, disrupted this industry. I'm guessing anyway that at a particular time there's going to be stability when you now have people growing gradually to a particular point where we don't know, maybe there might be another disruption. Who knows? But I think we're at that phase. So I'm you're correct, and also Brand is equally very, very correct.
So let's, I mean, at the end of the day, what we want to see is change, right?
Yeah.
And and that's part of the reasons why we're having some of these conversations and engaging industry professionals, you know, to, let's have the conversations and begin to think, begin to innovate, because that is the future if you want to remain relevant, you know. So it was quite interesting, and I'm sure that our listeners really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So thank you very much for, you know, first off, we'd like to thank Brian. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And then to our beautiful and amazing listeners, thank you all over the world. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. We have people from Uganda, Kenya, South Africa, here in Nigeria, US, Australia.
That makes me happy.
We're global.
Talk about your you know, your presentation. I mean, for those of us that are interested, we'd like to know what platform, where exactly, you know, it's going to hold.
The event is Digital Innovation and Insurance Conference for Africa. So it's going to hold virtually, actually, and is organized by West African Business School and African Bank Assurance Academy. And so they're putting it together, and the roll call is amazing. Dr. Kera is going to be there. Aparajit actually is going to be there. He's going to be taking a keynote presentation as well there. So there's a lot of people that are going to be there as well. Ipeme Neto, founder of Wella Health as well, is going to be speaking at the conference as well. So it's interesting. So one of the conversations I'm going to be having during the conference is a fireside chat. So I'm going to be having a fireside chat with the founder of Be Smart. So Be Smart is an insurance aggregator in Kenya. Right, so they sell insurance virtually, you know, aggregating insurance for people to be able to buy easily and faster. And so I'm going to be having a conversation with the CEO and the founder, and I'm looking forward to that as well, and to learn about some of the innovative ways that they are doing their business. We'll talk about the Kenya market as well, and what they are up to recently. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, all right. That's fantastic. So for everyone who might be interested, you could just contact us on, you know, our LinkedIn page.
Yeah.
And then on Twitter as well. And, you know, some of our other social media handles.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And see you next time.
Bye.